Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast on a Monday where Oklahoma State is still undefeated. They're 10-0. Joining me is Kyle Porter from Pistols Firing Blog. Kyle, can you believe it?
It's November 16th. I can't believe Oklahoma State hasn't lost yet. It's, you know, the 17-point comeback, second time this year, only the third time that's ever happened. It's unreal what's going on. And, you know, Mike Gundy said it after the game on Saturday. He said, "It sure is a lot of fun," and I couldn't agree with him more. It's different than 2011. 2011 felt like a juggernaut, and this is something entirely different, but no less fun, probably even more fun, because each week it's something new, and it's been a blast.
It's more fun than 2011 because it was so unexpected. Like, no one expected them to be 10-0 at this point.
Yeah.
And, like, when the 2011 team would, like, get down, you'd almost sense, just amongst the OSU people, like a sense of panic, in that, like, the only chance that they've ever had to win a Big 12 title was going down the drain. Now it's like they're just playing with house money, and, you know, they'll probably come back, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a different feel for me when I watch them play.
Well, I actually tweeted during the game, because Mike Yurcich was calling screen passes to his third string running back from his second string quarterback, J.W. Walsh. And I just said, "Hey, house money's house money, and you can do whatever you want," apparently, because, I mean, that dude, he's just emptying the tank every week. Like, and I think this is something that's sort of going overlooked, or maybe an underrated aspect of OSU's team. And I think it was David Glidden talked about this after the game. Like, they do it in a different way every week. Like, the 2011 team, you knew what you were getting, right? Like, you knew exactly what was going to happen. Weeden to Blackman, Just Fran will run for 100 yards, whatever. This team, it's just like somebody new every week, and they're running different plays every week, and it's just, I don't know. It's crazy, but it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, one week it's Marcel Aitman, one week it's James Washington. It was Chris Carson out of nowhere against Iowa State. I mean, who would have saw that coming? Yeah, you're right. They're almost a more complete team in that way, if that makes any sense. They're not as talented. They don't have as many NFL guys. They're just a little more, even as far as production is concerned. You know, it's basically all Blackman and a little bit of Cooper and a little bit of Tracy Moore. Now it's every week someone else steps up. So that's also a difference between this team and the 2011 team, for sure.
Well, and Mike Gundy, you know, he even said that. And it's funny because he was talking after the game about how in 2011, when they got down at Iowa State, or when things started going badly at Iowa State that November, he didn't know what to do, because the only thing that he had done all season had worked in every game. And so he was just talking about how, like, this time around, he felt like it's almost like, because this team isn't elite from a talent level, it's forced him and the other coaches to coach more. And I don't necessarily blame him for 2011. Like, you do what brought you there, and you just, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But their lack of elite ability has forced OSU's coaches to be better and be more creative. And it really has, in a strange way, made them a more complete team.
That was a fascinating soundbite from Mike Gundy. Like, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
The way, like, and he basically said, "We're not going to get out schemed or out coached this time around." He goes, "I know what happened last time we were up here. We just thought we'd get off the plane and win."
Yeah.
But it really was eerie in that, you know, 2011, OSU led 24-7 and lost.
Yep.
And this year, Iowa State led 24-7. And isn't that crazy how they basically flipped the script?
Well, it's, I think people forget about that. Like, I feel like everybody acts about the 2011 game that Oklahoma State just came out flat and they didn't, you know, they had the tragedy and everything. And yes, they did, but they didn't come out flat. They came out lights out like they had all year. And then something happened after halftime, and it was just, it went poorly in the second half. But yeah, this year was the exact opposite. And we can talk about it, but I don't know how much you got to see the end. I've got a new nickname for J.W. Walsh.
Another one?
Yeah. He's the closer. He was Mariano Rivera on Saturday evening in Ames because, and Rudolph again, he doesn't get enough credit, and we've talked about that all year. But Walsh was awesome at the end of the game, and he was yelling at Emmanuel Ogba. He was up in his face, hitting him on the shoulder pad. He had to like jump, I think, to hit his shoulder pads. But he was pretty awesome at the end of the game, and it was fun to see.
So he's Rivera. What does that make Rudolph? Is he Tom Glavine? He's not Randy Johnson.
No,
he's throwing 100 mile an hour.
He's Andy Pettit.
He's Andy Pettit. Okay, we're sticking with the Yankees.
Yeah, minus the HGH or whatever.
Yeah, I hate the Yankees. I don't know if I like the Yankee analogy, but anyway, that's better than stay at home mom for Mason, I would think.
I still like the breadwinner too. That's good.
The breadwinner. Yeah. But no, didn't you love the jabroni Iowa State fan that wrote "Remember 2011" on a piece of cardboard? Did you not remember to buy a poster board, you jabroni?
It was like he found a discarded beer box outside the stadium.
Yeah, he found a piece of trash and like stumbled upon a Sharpie and like made that's the best he could come up with. But it's incredible, and it's just amazing to me that they've come back in so many games and are still undefeated. That's pretty crazy, and I don't know how the playoff committee is going to look at them, but they're unbeaten. They're 10-0, and they're playing with some major, major, major house money with two games to go.
Did you see the? I want to ask you something about house money here in a second. But did you see the GIF of Walsh pulling a Patrick Reed on the Iowa State fans?
I saw it. Yes, I saw it live. This is kind of crazy how I watched the finish of the game. I'm standing on the field at Baylor, watching on my phone on the Watch ESPN app, and I saw the play. And all I could think was when he did it was they're going to throw a flag and they're going to get the ball at like the 50, which is what I thought was going to happen. But that was a pretty seminal moment in the season.
Yeah, it was awesome. And my favorite part of that GIF is
Holder.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike Holder, it's weird, dude. He like just roams around on the field. Like every time I'm at an OSU game down on the field, he like just like walks laps around the field. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, like he owns the place or something, which I guess...
I mean, he can walk anywhere he wants. He doesn't even need like a credential, I don't think. But he's got like one of those all-access passes on. And he just kind of walks around with his sweater vest and his orange cowboy boots.
His orange boots, yeah. He for everybody who didn't see it, there when Walsh puts his finger up to his mouth and quiets the crowd, even though Oklahoma State was still losing at the time. Holder, you can see him at the very bottom of the clip, and he's just giving a little fist pump and sort of walking the other direction. And it's just, I don't know, there's something about it. It's really cool. And it was, I didn't notice it live. I had to go back and pull the GIF and put it up. But I don't know, it was awesome. So what I wanted to ask you about the house money thing, is there a part of you, and Nolan and I were texting about this over the weekend, is there a part of you that it's sort of, the term that Nolan used was a house of cards. Like the 2011 team, you knew they were going to win. This team, you're like, wow, this team could be 6-4 right now, but they're 10-0. Does that come tumbling down the next couple of weeks and they just get beat by two or three touchdowns in each game?
I don't think that'll happen, but I also don't think that's unreasonable based on just what we've seen play out. I mean, I think Baylor's severely weakened without their – if they had Seth Russell, I think that would be a much stronger possibility. I don't see it happen. I think the next two games will be close. But, yeah, it's just totally different than the Iowa State feeling. Like, I don't even like – I don't know. It's hard to describe just watching these games. It's just so much different. But I don't think there's any chance they get blown out the next two, especially since they're at home. And if you thought Jarrett Stidham had a tough time against OU, their D-line, like, Emmanuel Ogba's going to say hello a couple times. Like, he's going to have a tough time up at Stillwater.
Yeah, he is. It's so – I mean, we've talked about it all year, but it's so big for Oklahoma State to have those games at home and at least have the Baylor game at night. Because that's just such a tough deal for a true freshman to walk into. I mean, I don't want to overrate that fact, but it just, it's tough to see him you know, it's tough to see Jarrett Stidham going out and putting up like 500 and five touchdowns. It really is. And maybe he will. I think he's talented enough to do it, but.
Well, who was the last quarterback to do that? Sam Bradford in a night game? To just totally just light up? Maybe Landry Jones that one game, 2010. But other than that, at a night game in a big stage like that, I can't remember too many performances where a quarterback's gone in and done that. Plus, Stidham's hurt. His back's kind of jacked up. So I like OSU's chances in that game, which will just set up just the bedlam to end all bedlams, the apocalypse bedlam is what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, I did see that the Big 12 said that it's either going to be an 11 a.m., 2:30, or 7 o'clock start. It's like, if you put that, if Oklahoma State's 11-0 and OU's 10-1, you put that game at 11 a.m., like, the Big 12 offices should be burned down.
Just disband the conference at that point. I mean, how idiotic and how stupid. The Big 12 just doesn't know what they're doing by putting OSU and OU head-to-head against each other this coming weekend. Like, that's your biggest showcase weekend of the entire season so far.
Yeah.
And you're putting the games at the same time. And don't give me this TV, one of this crap. Oh, you got tired of playing at 11 a.m. And you know what happened? They quit playing at 11 a.m. Like, the conference can tell them when they're playing the games. And the Big 12 dropped the ball time on this.
But how much of that is the conference's interaction with Fox and with ABC and with ESPN? Like can't Fox – I mean – Fox is paying a lot of money to televise these games. Can't Fox come to the Big 12 and say, hey, this is what time these teams are playing and it's going to be on our network? And then, you know, ESPN can do the same thing. Isn't that, I mean, does the Big 12 have any say in that?
I'm not sure how it all works, but I do know that OU loudly voiced that they were tired of playing 11 a.m. games, and lo and behold, they didn't play another one.
Yeah.
So I think it's a give and take there. Obviously, they're paying big time dollars, but the Big 12, just put like Fox. What are you afraid of? Put the game. I don't care if it's OU or OSU. Put one of those at 2:30. CBS isn't afraid to put their marquee SEC game at 2:30, and you know what? The entire freaking country watches it. Well, like what's the problem with putting the game at 2:30?
The playoff committee has it on every screen, probably.
Maybe. I mean, do they get Big 12 games?
No. I'm talking about the SEC game of the week.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. They don't get the Big 12 games. It's all the CBS. I don't know. It's just the Big 12, just they constantly just do the wrong thing and don't seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. It's been strange to see, like, Joel Klatt be the leader of the Big 12 over the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. Like,
the flag bearer. We're going to call him the flag bearer.
Yeah, it's not Bob Bowlesby. It's not, you know, I think that I saw that Stoops went on a couple of ESPN shows and sort of repped the conference. And I know that's not really Mike Gundy's style, but it's like somebody's got to be out there doing something because otherwise – you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but you're gonna get shut out of the postseason again.
Well, yeah, I mean, people watch ESPN for the most part; they don't watch Fox. Yeah. And so, what's ESPN talking about? The SEC. There's no Big 12 voice out there, and I do feel bad for the coaches. Like, it shouldn't be the coach's job to like promote the league. That's not their job. Like, their job is to win football games.
Right.
And I haven't heard a peep out of Bowlesby, the athletic directors. You know, people whose job it is to promote the league, and I don't know. It just, they have a big time PR problem. But it did help that the Pac-12 completely took a dive over the weekend.
God, that was glorious. I watched.
Get out of here, Stanford.
Take your body clocks, throw them in the Pacific Ocean. I watched the end of the Stanford Oregon game.
Me too.
And did you see that catch?
Yeah.
Where the
pass interference catch?
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the best catches I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know. Nobody
– he's out of bounds.
But I feel like nobody, like, said anything. I was like, that is literally one of the 5 best catches I've ever seen. And I know it didn't count, but that was unbelievable.
Well, and the refs just completely bailed out Stanford there. That wasn't a pass interference.
No, that was really bad. Before we get
– that was huge news for the Big 12.
Before we get to that, anything else from the OSU game that stood out to you? Didn't it feel like – again, I don't know how much of the game you got to see. Didn't it feel like – their north-south running game was the best it's been all year, really?
Absolutely. And Brian Keating and I were, you know, we were in Waco, and we were kind of talking about it. He made a great point. He was like, you know, if they had a legit like star running back, like these plays are blocked pretty well. I think the offensive line was had lanes, and Carson did a good enough job, but they just didn't have a guy that could just burst through there and make a play on his own. You know what I mean? Like, the plays seemed like they were blocked well enough for a running game, and they ended up having success running it. But, like, and Keating brought this up too, they've missed on some guys on running back. Ronald Jones at USC, they had committed. He left. Herschel Sims didn't pan out. They've had some highly touted guys. There's another one I'm forgetting that just didn't quite make it on campus or didn't pan out for whatever.
Well, the kid
it's killing them.
Devin Thomas.
Yeah, Devin Thomas. I think that's the one I couldn't think of.
Yeah.
They've had some guys that they wanted a running back that were pretty legit that just didn't pan out, and that's kind of hurt them in the run game, but they now are starting to block well enough to where that's not mattering nearly as much.
Yeah.
I did want to say one thing about – sorry, I'll let you follow up there.
I feel like Chris Carson runs like Adrian Peterson if Adrian Peterson had like a torn hamstring. Like, that's what
– He runs so upright like him. You're right.
That's what it feels like. And he played – I will say he played very well against Iowa State. And, you know, I keep going back to it, but Mike and Mike, I don't know who's doing what, but they've been money over the last month. I mean – you know, to not have a run game pretty much for the most part of the Big 12 season, and then they're calling running plays on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 8, with the season on the line in the fourth quarter. You're down 10. You're calling a running play on 3rd and 6. Like, what? And it works. And it's like that's big time. Like that's having some intestinal fortitude.
Well, think about this. You know, I've been as tough on Mike Yurcich as anybody, but what happened when he didn't have Dax Garmon as his quarterback? He's been pretty good ever since. You know, getting Mason Rudolph in there, they've been completely different, and Dax Garmon's like the third string quarterback at like Maryland.
Yeah.
So clearly they had some big issues that were kind of out of his control, and I mean, they couldn't even get a first down hardly last year. Now they're rolling, and they've done a fantastic job. And I do want to say, Mason Rudolph, is what'd you call him, the truth earlier in the year?
The truth, yeah.
Like, he's not gonna have the stats to get any national attention, but he is big time.
Yeah.
He's now what, 12-1?
12-1 is the starter. He's beat every Big 12 team except for Baylor.
His only loss was his first career start on the road at Waco. That's pretty special.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. And he had a mini flu game at Iowa State. Apparently he was sick.
Apparently the team has what I have. I have like some respiratory problems. I've been coughing, sneezing, blowing my nose. So they overcame that for sure.
Yeah. No, Rudolph has been really, really good. And I mean, he kept him in it in the first half. They put together, this is another thing that goes back to like just their ability. And I'm going to write a post on this. I think like this Oklahoma State team is like a chameleon. Like, they just changed their identity so much. They put together a 7-minute drive and a 6-minute drive consecutively at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. That's unheard of in Oklahoma State offense terms. You know, if you look back to the previous week when I don't think they had a scoring drive that was over 90 seconds. Like, literally, I don't think they scored on a drive that took longer than like a minute and 20 seconds.
That's
and
incredible.
It, you know, to switch back and forth, and for Rudolph to be able to play both ways, you know, he's been really, really good. And if you give him all of JW's touchdowns, there might be a little more Heisman talk than there will be over the course of the next 2 weeks.
No doubt. And is JW coming back for a sixth year? I keep thinking that's like in the back of my head this whole season. Like, is this going to happen again next year? I mean,
I hope so. I'm loving it. I don't know if Rudolph is loving it in terms of not getting to score, but I think it's great.
Like, we got to put like a, you know, like those brigadier generals that have all like the credentials on their shirt, like on their jacket, like all those little like bar grams, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, the bars with like the stars on them, and the
like,
yeah.
Doesn't JW need one of those like embroidered on his jersey if he comes back for a sixth year?
Yeah, it's like the captain deal in the NFL. Like Peyton wears the captain with all the stars. Like, His should have a C and then just have those bars underneath, like all the way down, all the way down, like to his stomach.
OSU has those for the bowl game, don't they? With like the little C on the front, with like the guns or whatever.
Yeah, I think they put them like up in the neck area.
Yeah, so maybe they'll have to just make that a season-long deal for them.
Okay, I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about OU Baylor, and I want to talk about the college football playoff picture. So let's go OU Baylor first. You were there. OU's really good right now.
OU is a juggernaut. They are really, 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 really good. And I don't understand. We're never going to understand how they lost to Texas.
That needs to be a 30 for 30.
That probably will be. if they end up winning a national title, it will be. But I picked Baylor, and it's funny to me, Kyle. Like, people just expect you to like be a cheerleader. Like I picked Baylor before the game on. You know, we had the game on our air, so a lot of people were watching our pregame. Even though it got killed by Jim Harbaugh in the Big Ten.
Your boy.
They couldn't get a stop. The big bad Big Ten couldn't play any defense. Shocker. And so our hour-long pregame show was 15 minutes. But I did make a prediction at the end of the show that Baylor would win. I said, this has nothing to do with OU. This has everything to do with this game's in Waco. They've won 20 in a row here, 21 in a row, whatever it was, 29 to 30. It's just a bad spot. And they've dominated OU for the last 2 years. And I get people like emailing me and tweeting me like, nice pick. And some lady was like, even if you think OU's going to lose the game, don't say it. Support your state. And I'm like, that's not my job. I'm not a cheerleader. Do I have pom-poms? Like, what? I had to get that out. That just frustrates me to no end. I picked OU to beat Texas, and I didn't get one tweet from anybody. You know, it's just funny how that works. But anyway, Baker Mayfield is so much better than I ever gave him credit for. During the offseason, I was like, Baker Mayfield's not the answer. That guy, all that guy did was throw picks against the good teams he played.
Yeah.
He's been as good or better than Jason White or Sam Bradford. His numbers are very similar. He has more rushing yards and more rushing touchdowns than those two. And he's the difference in what OU is this year as opposed to last. Their defense has gotten better, no doubt. But if you don't have a quarterback, you're in deep trouble. And they have one. They have one of the best in the country. I think he's top five in the Heisman, no doubt. I don't know where you would rank him at this point, but he's incredible. Like, he's been unbelievable. And I couldn't believe if OU doesn't get like two or three silly penalties when they're in scoring range and then the ridiculous ejection, they run Baylor out of the stadium. Yep. Like they dominated.
Yeah, and you could it was I saw a tweet on this and I think it's totally true. OU spent the offseason treating Baylor like it was Texas and treating Texas like it was Baylor. And I mean that in the traditional sense, because they were fired up for that game. Like, they did not want to lose to Baylor, and they went out and proved it. Do you, by the way, do you have a I'm about to make a statement, just kind of get something off my chest. Do you have a hot take cannon sound, like a bit?
I don't.
Okay. Well, maybe we need to get that for the future. We need a hot take cannon.
I love your hot take cannon. I love when you type it. It's hilarious. It makes me laugh every time I read it.
I really like Baker Mayfield. And I know that that's – I tweeted that on Saturday night. And my mentions were just out of control. But he's awesome. And – he's sort of, I think I've said this before, he's sort of AJ Pierzynski-ish in that you like him until he's playing your team and then you absolutely hate him. Or if he's on your team, you love him. But he was Johnny. He was Johnny Light on Saturday and has been all year. And I hope both teams get past this week, because Bedlam's going to be awesome. And I think Rudolph and Baker Mayfield are up to the challenge. I think they love the big stage and it's just fun to watch, you know, like just as a fan, it's very enjoyable to watch both of those teams.
Wait for it. I'm loading the hot take cannon. Wait for it.
Okay.
Was that good?
It sounded like a pellet gun. It sounded like Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer trading shots in like a silo or something.
Maybe my volume wasn't. It's hard. I got to unplug the headphones and it's tough. But Baker Mayfield talked more crap than anybody on the field, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah.
I thought it was awesome. I'm in a group text with some OU friends, and at times it gets annoying because they send about a million during the game.
Yeah.
But the consensus is they like Baker Mayfield more than they like Sam Bradford, more than they like Jason White.
That's being prisoner of the moment, isn't it?
Maybe, but I think there's something to him in that he's like my size.
Yeah.
He's probably smaller. I've interviewed him a few times. He might be shorter than me. I'm 5'11".
Yeah.
Like there's something about a guy his size that nobody wanted as a walk-on, just going in there, talking all the crap, and backing every second of it up. And the fact that he's like one of us, basically. He's not a 6'4", you know, Mason Rudolph type. He's just a dude out there playing like A-League flag football and beating Baylor on the road. There's something about that, in that he's like an everyman that I love, and I love watching him play. And Sterling Shepard might be my favorite Sooner of all time.
Yeah.
I covered him in high school. Super great guy. Like I knew he would be really good in college. I did not dream he would be this good. He's up there with Mark Clayton. He's up there with Broyles. I don't know what order you put him in, but he is special. And he's a tremendous story too, with his dad being a former walk-on at OU. He wears his dad's number. His dad passed away at a very young age. His dad would be really proud of him, and he's an awesome player to watch.
Yeah, I did get a tweet during the OU game that said it was after I tweeted about Mayfield, and it said if you ever wanted to know what a Sigma Nu A-League flag football offense would look like. Like on the on the college level, Baker Mayfield's running it right now, and it's true. Like he's just out there. It really does remind you of Johnny a little bit, and I don't know. I mean, what was the feeling in the stadium there? What were Baylor fans like before the game, during the game, after the game?
Super nerdy, just nerds everywhere. That's what Waco is like. It really was. I went around the stadium to do a story on all the kids camping out and stuff, and they were nice, but they're a little bit nerdy. But I do have a funny story about Baker. Like before the game, during warmups, you know, he's wearing his Beats and he's like running around and he's catching passes like in the corner of the end zone, trying to do like 1 foot in, 2 foot in, or whatever. And he's catching like bullets too. I'm like, isn't this a great way to like dislocate a finger on your throwing hand before a game? Like it's. If Bob Stoops saw that, maybe he does see it and just doesn't care. But I was like nervous, like just watching him. I was like, what is he doing? He's going to like break his finger before the game. It was crazy to me.
Do you think you watched that game? I was in and out because I was writing and trying to get some stuff up for the website. But is Baylor broken now? Like did OU break them and now Oklahoma State can put them away? Or is this kind of a speed bump that they're going to learn from, and now you don't want a pissed off Baylor team. Which of those ends of the spectrum do you think they're at?
I think they got exposed a little bit without their quarterback. It's just you can't write off the fact they lost the quarterback. Like Stidham, I think, is really good. I thought he would be better than he was. But there is something to Baylor. Baylor, to me, is like they're like the Clippers in that everyone in the league hates them more than anybody else. Even like the rivals hate Baylor more than their rivals. And they're a bit of a front runner. When they get punched in the mouth, they don't know how to react because they don't play anybody. I think that's hurt them as much as anything else over the years. They don't play anyone early. They wait all their big games are at the end of the schedule, and they haven't been tested. Like just look at Oklahoma State. They've been tested. They know how to react when they're down. Baylor doesn't. Just look back to the Central Florida game. They get punched in the mouth by Central Florida. Don't know how to act in the Fiesta Bowl. Michigan State last year.
Yeah.
They're up 21 points. Michigan State starts to rally. They panic. Don't know how to react. They lose. So do I think they're a great program? Yes. Art Briles is an incredible coach. They're a great program. But I do think it hurts them that they don't play anybody. Like they got to start scheduling people. Just not only just for their playoff committee standing, just so they get tested a little bit, and build up some toughness, because I think they're a lot like the Clippers in that way, and they'll fold their tent quicker than anybody.
Well, that's interesting, because I wrote this earlier, I think at the end of October, about how, and I didn't totally believe it at the time. I was sort of writing it as a, like, I hope this happens, but I don't know if it is. I wrote that, like, Oklahoma State struggling to win games and winning them late in a bunch of different ways will help them for November, because they know how to do it. And now you've seen it help them for November. I mean, the players talked about that after the Iowa State game and said, hey, we don't really panic. Like, we know that the game is 60 minutes. We know what we have to do. We've done this multiple times this year. I think Walsh and Rudolph both said that. And I think there's something to that. And maybe that's like revisionist history of, hey, Oklahoma State won a lot of close games, so this must be like why they do it. But it does feel like there's something there. And that's it's almost like Baylor's getting punished because they're so good that they just front run all year. And then when they get hit a little bit by a good team, they don't know what to do. And I think you're right about that.
Well, and just look at the way they called plays. Like, they haven't been in that situation a lot, and they seem confused as to what to do. They kept running the ball when they just flat out couldn't block OU.
Yeah.
They were almost stubborn in a way, in that they didn't know how to react and what to run. Now, I know Stidham, his back was hurt. They said he got hurt on the first series. But they clearly were flustered. I mean, their offense was not in rhythm at all night. You got to give OU a lot of credit. They stopped the run, and that's what Baylor does best. They've done that to everyone they've played, and they didn't know how to react once they couldn't do that.
Yeah, it's true. I hope the same is true this coming Saturday. Okay, let's talk about the college football playoff picture real quick. I've actually got another podcast that I'm jumping on in about 10 minutes. So,
man, you're ditching me?
I'm cheating on our podcast. Yes,
man, ditching me like nobody's business. What's up with that? What podcast are you going on?
David Ubbin. He wanted me to come on. I think his exact words are, I want you to come on and tell people how you survive watching this team every Saturday. So
that's a good way to put it.
I thought that was good. Stanford goes down. LSU goes down. Utah goes down. Baylor goes down. What's this going to look like on Tuesday night? We were gonna live podcast during the show, which I wish we could do, but we've got a scheduling conflict, so we're gonna do something on Wednesday morning. But looking at Tuesday night, what are you expecting to see?
I'm expecting OSU to be nowhere near the top four. I think they'll be six, maybe seven. I don't think they're gonna move them up very much at all. And I texted you after the game. I was joking, but like as I started typing it, I started like thinking, like, wait a second, this might actually happen, and that OU might be ahead of OSU in the rankings. Yeah. And that might be a reality. They might be in the top four. How crazy would that be?
I think there's a 50-50 chance of it. I'm not gonna say that it's going to happen, but I really think it could. And it's just, I mean, it's crazy because they basically have the same schedule. Like, they've played all the only difference is Baylor and TCU. They haven't played the other one yet. But we'll say Baylor and TCU are somewhat equal. And then OU played Tennessee in the non-conference. So if OU is ahead of Baylor, the committee is essentially saying, we don't care about losses, or we think Tennessee's really good. If OU's ahead of Oklahoma State, because there's no other explanation for that. Like, and you said this last week, like, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I care about teams losing. I don't think the committee does, apparently. And I don't want to get all worked up over it if Oklahoma State's going to be ahead of OU. But what's the point of playing games if you don't care about wins and losses? It's just who looks better. And I don't know. There's part of me that, and I wrote this, there's part of me that hopes that OU is ahead of Oklahoma State, because it'll be absurd and stupid, and Glenn Spencer will have a whole bunch of nobody believes in us cards to play for the next 2 weeks if that's the case.
Glenn Spencer's already researching warrior poems to recite. It's clear to me the committee cares more about how good you look than losses. I mean, just look at Ohio State last year. They lost to a 6-6 Virginia Tech team. And what did everybody say in 2011? Well, OSU has the worst loss, so Alabama needs to be in. Even though OSU had beaten six or seven ranked teams, and Alabama had only beaten three.
Yep.
So it's clear to me the criteria has totally shifted from the team with the worst loss to, well, who's playing the best? Who's the most impressive team lately? Yeah. And they can excuse losses. So,
well, and I think the one thing that people really underrate is, and I've got a piece that you showed to me that I'm going to post later this week on the website about the juggernaut theory. It's a really, really interesting theory about kind of historically great teams and how that fits in. But I think the one thing that people underrate is how difficult it is to win 12 games in a row. I don't care if you're playing I don't care if you're Houston and you're playing, I don't even know what, the American Conference or whatever. It is so hard to get 85 dudes lined up for 14 weeks in a row, including bye weeks, and win 12 straight games. It's just, I think people underrate that. And I hope that if Oklahoma State goes 12-0, that it doesn't get underrated, that they're rewarded for it. But I don't know. I mean, do you feel like that's an underrated thing?
It's so underrated. It's almost impossible to go undefeated. There's only, one team a year, maybe two tops that go undefeated. And even that takes just some shocking, you know, plays towards the end of games to make happen. And just think about it this way. The juggernaut theory is spectacular. I can't wait till you post it. Justin Brownlee, friend of mine on Twitter, sent it to me. It's a fantastic read. And basically the gist of it this week is if OU had OSU's resume, they'd be number one in the country because they're OU. But since OSU has that resume, well, they had to struggle. They had to come from behind to win, and they're undefeated, but we don't think they're one of the best teams. You know, it's just the narrative can shift based on whose resume is whose. Just look at Ohio State. They've done nothing, and they're unbeaten, and they're just automatically in the top three.
Yep.
So it just the juggernaut theory is real, and it's fantastic, and I can't wait to get it out there.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Okay, let's end on this. If you have to predict right now, November 16th, who do you think, not who should get in the playoff, who do you think the Final Four will be on December, I believe it comes out December 6th?
The final rankings?
Yep.
Final Four?
Final Four.
You're basically asking me to pick Bedlam, and I'm not ready to do that.
Well, I'm, okay. I know.
What do you got?
I think the Final Four is going to be, I didn't think this through. I think it's going to be Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama, and OU.
Wow. No Ohio State, huh?
I think going down? Yeah, I think Ohio State's going down. To do what they've... I mean, they've won, 26 in a row? We're talking about... We're getting in all-time great teams territory, like in the in the history of college football. And I don't know if they're an all-time... They're a really good team. I don't know if they're an all-time great team.
Think about this. What if Clemson loses to North Carolina and Ohio State loses? Then it's just pure chaos. All the once beaten teams are going to be fighting for those spots.
Well, they'll probably just put Florida and LSU. Arkansas might make it. Who knows?
It'll be like three SEC teams and OU. If I had to say right now, I'll say Clemson, Ohio State, Bama, and OU.
Yeah.
OU looks really good. It's going to take a gargantuan effort for... I think OU is going to steamroll TCU since Boykin's hobbled.
I do too.
And then it's going to set up the apocalypse bedlam November 28th. May the best man win. And I cannot wait for that game. I hope it gets to the point where it is unbeaten OSU, once beaten OU for all the marbles. Like, you and I would never have dreamed this when we were in college.
Did you see the stat that Bill Haston tweeted out today about how this late in through 10 games, this is the best combined record that those two teams have ever had?
Ever,
19-1.
That's what you want, man.
That's phenomenal.
That's stunning.
Yeah, hey, it's cool. We got 7 days, or we got 5 days, I guess, until we see if it's happening. But I will certainly be rooting for it.
Did I tell you I got to meet Chris Fowler this weekend?
Oh, I want to hear about it. Tell me about it. We've got like 2 or 3 minutes. Give me the rundown.
Well, you don't get to meet your idols very often.
Yeah.
It's super weird. He was talking to John Moss, my friend from Tulsa, sports director there. I guess they'd interviewed him for the shows. And I just walked up to John, said hello, and I go, "Oh, Chris Fowler." And he goes, "Hey, man, how's it going?" And he introduced himself, and it was real brief. And then I walked away to go back to our live truck, and then there's a voice behind me at like 100 yards away, like 100 yards down the line. He goes, "Are you with Waco or Oklahoma City?" And I turn around, it's Chris Fowler. And I was like, "Oh, I'm with Oklahoma City." And we started chit-chatting, and he asked me where I went to school. And it was super cool, but like it's super weird too. Like I was totally like in my mind, like fanboy.
Yeah.
Like I wanted a picture, I wanted to do all this stuff, but like I totally pretended like I wasn't even that interested to talk to him. You know what I mean? Like I had to like it's weird. Like
yes.
I super wanted to be like fanboy, but I just don't have the nerve to be like that. I can't do it. I had to like pretend to Chris Fowler, you're okay.
Yeah.
It's cool to talk to you, I guess.
Yeah. You wanna come on our podcast?
Oh, I should have asked him. See, I couldn't even do that. I can't. I don't have the nerve. I'm not that guy. I don't ask for autographs.
Yeah, no, you don't. But you don't want to be that guy. Like, that yeah. Guy is, yeah, it's not.
But he was super awesome. They say you don't want to meet your idols, but he was as cool as it gets.
What,
it
was, did you guys just, was it small talk? Did you talk about football?
Yeah, we talked about, I told him I went to Oklahoma State in college. He asked me where I went to school. I said Oklahoma State. And then I mentioned Brian Keating got his broadcasting stuff from Colorado, which is where he went. And we talked a little bit about, you know, going to broadcasting school and how it really doesn't prepare you for the real world. You just got to learn on the fly. And
then
he said, "Man, I wish I was going up to Stillwater for the Baylor game, but that's a Fox game." And me and Brian, like, I looked at him, I was like, "Oh, crap," because we didn't know that yet.
Yeah.
We thought there was a chance the ABC game would be up there in Stillwater. So he kind of broke some news to us that we had to keep quiet until it came out.
That's awesome.
But it was awesome.
That's cool.
It was great.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, in case you get in touch with him between now and Thursday, ask him to come on our podcast on Thursday.
I might have to, like, just storm into the announcer booth in Stillwater. "Chris, remember me? Come on my podcast real quick."
Okay, Carson, we will be back at it Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning when yeah. I was ranked like 15th or something.
I want you to just drink all of the coffee on Wednesday morning and just I'm just going to let you have the floor for like 10 minutes.
If I was number four and I have a gallon of coffee in me, it could be bad. It could be an all-time podcast.
Okay, we'll talk to you then.
All right, man.
Okay,
see ya.
Bye.